What is up, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome to episode 246 of the Massive Breakdown Podcast. We have a fantastic episode for you tonight. We're going to be talking about some information they revealed to us in the TWAB and also after the TWAB on Twitter. They are bringing a couple of weapons back. They have told us at least one weapon they are bringing back for Trials, two weapons they are bringing back for Nightfalls, and that all sounds well and good. But then on Twitter, lo and behold, after the TWAB, DMG comes back and they're also removing some weapons. A fair amount of them, some of them which are pretty important. So because that wasn't in the TWAB, we're going to get that out of the way. We're going to talk to you about which of those weapons are important. Maybe you should try to grind for them before they go away. And then we realized when we were looking in the podcast discussion channel in the Discord earlier today that we have been letting some questions stack up in the document that the listeners post questions in. We have not answered listener questions in a hot second. So we are going to answer a few of those questions, get those out of the way. As we kind of wrap up this home stretch, well, I guess it's not really wrapping it up. I guess it's just beginning the home stretch towards Witch Queen. But this, unfortunately, this week's TWAB was a little bit lighter on the information, particularly PvP wise. So we don't have a ton to talk about there, and we've kind of broken down all the weapons we want to break down. So all that being said, let's go ahead and get the introductions out of the way. As always, I'm your host, Mercules, joined tonight by Kit Kutcha. How are you doing this evening, Kit?
Doing pretty well, man. It's been a long beginning to 2022, but I feel like things can only go up from here. And so I'm looking forward to the rest of the year. I think it's going to be a good one. How about you?
Things are getting busy. Things are getting busy for me.
Yeah.
Obviously, the wedding is getting closer, the honeymoon after that. Lots of planning, lots of spending money on stuff right now, which is interesting. And a lot of playing video games. You know, I've been playing a good bit of Destiny, but we're definitely in the tail end of the season, where even I tend to take a little bit of a break. So I've actually gone back to my roots, and I've been playing a lot of Halo.
Nice.
Particularly the campaign. So we just finished up the Halo 3 campaign on Legendary with a handful of skulls on. Got the par scores on every mission and unlocked all those achievements. And now we're running Halo Combat Evolved, the original. Which I do not think that I have played that campaign since I was in like fifth grade or something. So that has been a real trip down nostalgia lane. But I've really been enjoying it. It's actually impressive how well it's aged.
That is impressive, actually, to hear that. But I believe it. Halo was a ton of fun back in the day. And there's a lot of DNA that has passed forward into Destiny, although Destiny, I think, grows further from those roots in a number of ways, more and more over time.
Every day it strays further from Halo's light, right? But speaking of Destiny, are you kind of surprised by how little we know about the Witch Queen? Now less than a month to go until the Witch Queen releases, and I feel like we know almost nothing about it other than there's going to be some sort of weapon crafting, we're getting a new type of weapon, and there's Hive Guardians. And besides that, it's been like mostly radio silence or just little short snippets.
So I will say, I think that we know about as much about the plot of Witch Queen as I care to know in advance. That said, we know nothing about the season that's coming alongside it. And unless I've completely missed some big news release somewhere, but I've heard zilch about the accompanying season in terms of activity, plot lines, nothing. And what I'm really getting antsy to hear about is what the sandbox is going to look like. The PvE and PvP sandboxes, because PvE is always a big deal to me, especially when a new release comes out. Always a big deal at the beginning of the season. I want to know, what are the activities? What are the new weapons? You know, what are the artifact mods going to be? It's difficult for me. I'm a planner. I love to plan ahead, optimize my time. I hate to have to wait till the day of to find out and then try to figure it out. That's hard when you're the type that, you know, we like to think ahead. And so I am getting antsy right now. They are really stringing us along, making us wait. It's painful.
Yeah, we only have, how many more TWABs do we have? 1, 2, 3. We have 3 more TWABs.
Yeah, 3 TWABs.
And that's it. And then it releases. That's not a lot of time for them to talk about stuff. And in particular, like that last TWAB right before the game releases, that's the night of my wedding. So we will not be doing an episode that night. Yeah. Interesting stuff. It's getting ever closer. I feel like we don't know a ton. They have been slow dripping the information. And this week, you know, we got some stuff. They talked about changing reputation up for trials and strikes and nightfalls and things like that. Wasn't really anything exciting. Honestly, the biggest things were that, they're bringing back a couple of weapons, and they talked about the Crucible kill times, like the respawn timers.
Yeah.
Like, that was all we got. And I'm starting to get, I know the community as a whole is not super strict about this, but I'm starting to get kind of a little bit concerned that, like, we haven't heard anything about Crucible at all.
Yeah.
In what feels like a very long time.
Yeah, they're always, you know, I feel like they come out every 6 months and say that they know that people want more on the Crucible front. People want changes. People want more maps. People want new game modes. People want something on the Crucible side. And they acknowledge that periodically, but we really haven't seen a lot happen in the game. And by a lot, I mean, I guess, anything. Aside from, you know, they've done some stuff with trials. They've done some experimenting. And I gotta give them credit for that. They did try a whole bunch of different stuff over this fall. I expect we'll see the dividends of that over the next 6 months. It does take time to digest those changes, to playtest new changes internally, and then to put those out. So, you know, we're going to see the dividends of those trials changes. But what about the rest of the Crucible? What's up with competitive still being a garbage playlist when it should be the best playlist in the game for both highly competitive and highly uncompetitive players?
Yep.
And what about the control playlist, which should be the connection based playlist, which should be the best playlist for the average player? And just getting nothing. Just no real changes. So,
and there's a lot that could be changed with all this.
There's things. A lot.
But that is now's not the time for it. You know what now is the time for is housekeeping.
It is.
We have somehow managed to get 5 minutes into the episode without starting. No, 7 minutes into the episode without starting housekeeping.
It's a surprise cold open.
Yeah. All right. So I guess we got to do housekeeping in 3 minutes then. Do we have any new Patreon news?
Well, I am glad you asked, because I need to buy time.
Go do a little bit of vamping? You want me to do the reviews first?
Let's go ahead and do the reviews first.
All right. We have 4 reviews this week. The first one is Great Show from Ranger. He says, "Hey guys, great podcast, fun conversation, and good content. On episode 245, I have some counterpoints from a player that likes both PvE and PvP. He says, I don't want a narrowed loot pool because not everyone wants sweaty PvP rolls. There's some cool combos to be made from perks which are useless in PvP. Legendary drops do drop great rolls in PvE, especially dungeons. You can do PvE to get better rolls for PvP. And he appreciates that. Light level caps also give value outside of content gates. It shows you if you should accept a player for in-game content or keep looking. This prevents the annoying make another group at hard sections. It also rewards PvE players by making runs easier and faster to gain levels." Well, Ranger, I do agree with that last point. I think we even said in the episode that there were reasons to have light level, although I don't agree with the it shows you if you should accept an in-game player or not, because I'm light level 1350 and I can promise you I don't know shit about how to run a raid. So if the only thing you're looking at is my light level, I'm going to look like a good player to have, and I'm not going to be any help at all. So I don't think that's the case. And the other thing about narrowing loot pools, when we talk about narrowing loot pools, we're not talking about like just cutting out the PvE perks.
Clearly not at all.
Talking about cutting out bad perks or just narrowing down the roles. You can still have a narrowed loot pool that rewards very exceptional PvE roles as well. So just wanted to clarify that for you, but thank you for the review.
Absolutely.
I do not mind at all if you leave questions or feedback for us in the reviews if you want to hear it read. It's a savvy way to get to air your grievances out and force us to respond to them. So
absolutely.
As long as you give us a 5-star review, I'm not going to take as kindly to it if you, because someone's done that before. They left us a negative, like a 1-star review, and aired their grievances. I'll take kindly to that. If you leave us a 5-star review, I take a little bit more kindly to it.
Yeah, absolutely.
RMAC24 says, this is how to progress your PvP skills. 5 stars. I've been listening to Massive Breakdowns for roughly 4 months, and I love everything you guys do. Your show has been instrumental in deciding how I have developed my PvP playstyle. I struggled in PvP for quite some time, not that I'm great now, but I found it so useful to have an understanding in weapon rolls and builds. I continue to have positive progress and an increase to my skill level that I can say is primarily due to your show. Great job, guys. Keep up the good work. P.S. Bungie, please don't nerf Monarch. Well, RMAC, you know the way straight to my heart. I also agree that we should not nerf LeMonarch. No bias there at all. And I'm glad that in the last 4 months that you've been listening to the show that you found your skills improving in PvP. That's pretty much what we're here for.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's fantastic to hear that you've been having a great experience. And we totally take full credit for all of your hard work that you've put in.
All right. Johnny the Cat King says, best weapon breakdown, period. 5 stars. I started listening a few months ago and greatly enjoy the comprehensive weapon breakdowns. Keep up the great work. Well, thank you, Johnny the Cat King, for a great review. I appreciate that. That name is quite a mouthful, and I don't know if it's a reference to something, nor do I know if I have pronounced it correctly. Knowing me, I probably did not, so I apologize for that.
All right.
And then the last one is from Adam L. He says, best Destiny 2 PvP podcast, 5 stars. This is the best PvP podcast for Destiny 2. Since I started listening to this podcast and their Star Wars podcast, Beneath Twin Suns,
yes,
I've gained a much deeper understanding of how the game works. Merc and Kit break down the perks and have very clear explanations. I found a bunch of perks that I love now because they help me understand not only why a perk is good for a particular weapon, but also in what situations you can get the most out of them. Kit and Merc are awesome as hosts, and the Force is strong with these two. Thank you very much, Adam L. It's either Adam L or Admiral L. It's ADM period, so I'm not entirely sure which, but might be Admiral. Either way, thank you very much for the review. We appreciate it. Thank you also for tuning in to the Star Wars podcast, which is a labor of love for the two of us that we pretty much do because the Patreons bribed us into it. And now we both, now it's something I look forward to every single week. And by the way, this week we get to talk about episode 5 of Book of Boba Fett.
Oh, yes.
Which was tremendous. So really excited about that too.
Yeah.
Thank you for the review.
I just finally had a chance to watch it earlier. A few hours before we're recording this, and I will be rewatching it probably 2, 3, 4 times before we record. It's so good.
Yeah, I watched it yesterday at the gym, and usually I do cardio once a week, and it's when I watch Book of Boba Fett at the gym. So I can like ride the stationary bike and watch Book of Boba Fett, and it was so good that I did cardio a second time today so I could rewatch Book of Boba Fett. So in the last 2 days, I've ridden the stationary bike 35 miles and burned 1,000 calories because I was watching Book of Boba Fett. So not only is it fun to watch, but it's also healthy for you too.
I appreciate that because I have not been able to do cardio for the last 2 weeks. Because apparently that's really bad for you when you have COVID. So, and I have to like hold off, like I can start resistance training now. But I'm supposed to hold off on cardio for like another week. And since cardio is like 50% of my training, it's excruciating. Anyway, that's a fantastic time to watch Book of Boba Fett. I watch it on the couch. We do have some patrons to say thank you to this week. So let's dive right into it here and try to get this done inside of 15 minutes. Big shout out to new patrons joining the crew. We've got Vault Hunter 57. Thank you so much for your pledge. We have Friday joining us. Appreciate your support. Dishonored Halo. Thank you so much. And Eyes for Pack 2934. Taking a stab at that one. Hopefully I got it right. Whether I did or I didn't, we appreciate you. Thank you so much for your pledge. Thank you, as always, to all of our ongoing patrons for your generous support. And a special shout out to our sponsor, Guardian. These Guardians go above and beyond to support the podcast. You'll recognize them in Discord with that notable burnt orange flare. A Solitary Bird, Deacon, This Moment 23, Conquer King 420, Black Hammer Tech, Askian Monk, Binary Wolf, Starscream S13, The Shazzle, and Zinzo Cal. Do be sure to give them a shout out, tell them thank you if you see them online. And if you'd like to have the gold flavor of a patron, you can't have the burnt orange flavor of a sponsor. Those are locked out. But if you'd like to join the Patreon, be sure to let us know or hit the link in our Twitter at DestinyMVP. Boom.
Very nice. Very nice. All right. Finish it up. So we can hop right into the new guns that are coming back. So there are two new Trials weapons which are coming back. One of them, they are keeping as a surprise, so we can guess what it is. And the other one is the Summoner. The Summoner is a 600 RPM solar auto rifle. Kind of interested that they are bringing back the Summoner because auto rifles are not in the strongest place right now. I think Scathelock makes probably the closest run to being meta for any auto rifle, if we obviously don't include Vex Mythoclast. I'm not really sure that that's going to drive a ton of players to play Trials to get that weapon. Especially because, you know, maybe you're feeling differently, but I'm not really super motivated to go into Trials by the rewards at this point in time in the season. I kind of have everything that I want, everything that I need. Is there still anything left that you are like grinding for?
Not really. Not anything that I'm likely to get. And I have to say, 600 RPM auto rifles, unless they are a true standout, like absolute outlier in either stats or perks in some way, I just don't care. Scathelock, I'll hang on to a good Scathelock. It's got 2.0 zoom. Blows other 600 RPMs out of the water. The Summoner, I mean, we may see a revamped perk pool change my mind. That's basically where I'm at with this one. Bungie, change my mind. Right now, I'm not excited about this one.
Yeah, it's obviously going to have, they wouldn't take it away and bring it back with the same perks. It's obviously going to have a different perk pool.
Yep.
The perk pool was pretty good before. I'm sure it'll be even better this time. The Summoner itself, so 600 auto rifles, 0.8 second TTK, which is pretty good, pretty fast. But that's with 8 crits and a body, and that's pretty unlikely with an auto rifle that you're going to hit. The more realistic TTK for the adaptives is 0.90 seconds, which is on the slower side. And that's with 6 crits and 4 bodies, so much more realistic that you're going to hit that. Body shot TTK is 1.3 seconds. That is okay, but certainly not great. Yeah, I mean, the Summoner stat-wise is okay. You know, it doesn't have the most range in its class. It doesn't have the least range. The adaptives pretty much all fit between 42 and 50, and it's at 46, so it's kind of right in the middle there. Stability-wise, it's kind of on the upper edge. They're all between 41 and 49. It's at 47. Handling, it does have very good handling. It has the best handling out of any of the adaptives you're going to see right now. 73 handling. Auto gear of the adaptives is all the way down at 61, so that is a pretty noticeable difference. And reload speed, again, kind of in the middle. They're between 54 and 64. It's at 60. And aim assist is actually bad. It's the worst out of all the adaptives. 62 aim assist, not very good. And then recoil direction, also not great, 57, but all the adaptives have shit recoil direction. At least it's closer to 5 as opposed to being something like a 60. And then mag size is 42. So stat-wise, doesn't really jump out at you. Archetype-wise, doesn't really jump out at you. We're kind of waiting to see what perks they put on it. Or maybe 600 autos are getting a buff. You don't know. Maybe they are.
Yep. That's definitely where the Change My Mind stance comes in here, right? They come out and they show us something to get excited about with these auto rifles. I'll be excited for the Summoner. But for now, yeah, I guess it's a wait and see.
And the trade-off, of course, is that they're actually removing two Trials weapons. They're removing the Igneous Hammer.
That's right.
They're removing the Soulless Scar. So if you want the 120 RPM aggressive hand cannon from Trials, not going to be able to get it next season. So you might want to try to grind it out now. Same thing with the projectile sword, the caster frame sword. If you want it, you got to kind of get it now. 120 hand cannons have obviously fallen off quite a bit since they got the little bit of the range nerf. They're still very, very useful, especially for specific play styles, but I think 140s have firmly stolen the limelight from them.
No, they absolutely have. And Bungie bringing out 140s with ridiculously good stats. Cough, cough, palindrome, Ias Luna, Fatebringer. It just is the nail in the coffin for 120s in terms of viability in PvP right now. They just don't have a good selling point now that their range is not significantly better.
Yeah, perhaps more exciting. They're bringing back two guns that at the time were very, very unique for Nightfalls. They're also changing the way Nightfalls work pretty substantially. I mean, they're changing the way you get reputation rewards from Nightfalls, but more importantly, they're kind of changing the way the modifiers work on Nightfalls. They said that they're going to remove a lot of the boss specific modifiers because they found that they weren't actually really super fun to deal with. There was no like build crafting to get around them. It was kind of just making you hide to avoid boss stomps and boss attacks. So they don't really like that too much. So they're going to get rid of that. They're adding an acute burn, which increases player damage taken by 50% from specific damage types and increases player damage dealt by 25%. Whereas currently, all the burn does is just increase player damage taken by 25%. So it's a 25% increase across both sides. And they're actually removing a lot of weapons from the Nightfall pool, but we'll talk about that in a minute. They're bringing back Duty Bound, which some of you guys may remember from Bless Its Heart, the awful, awful, the Titan Strike with the really horrible,
Oh.
Warlock. It was like the worst voice acting we've ever heard in Destiny. It's the giant, the giant shrieker. Was it Savathun's song? Was that
Savathun's song?
Was that the strike? The one.
Yep.
Oh god, that might go down in history as I would actually like turn the voiceover off when I would run that strike because it made the strike so much better if you didn't have to hear about Takeo 3. That's who it was. Oh, people who weren't here for Vanilla Destiny 2 don't know the pain of listening to that voiceover.
The thing that killed me the most about that one is that the lines were constantly glitching out when I would play it, so they would be like out of order on top of everything else. And it was just like, or they would repeat random lines, and it was just like, this makes no sense. This is so confusing. I got pretty good at speeding through most of it, though, because couldn't really avoid it if you wanted to run strikes. But yeah, Duty Bound is one that the one question I really want to ask about Duty Bound. I don't know. Do you want to read the stats first before I ask this question?
Yeah, it's not. Duty Bound's an interesting weapon. It's not a good weapon stat-wise. The main thing that's fun about it is that it had fixed rolls the last time I was here.
Yeah.
It's the first time we get it with random rolls. But stat-wise, poor range, 42 range, bottom of the barrel, middling stability at 45. Poor handling at 61, again, bottom of the barrel. Poor reload speed at 54, again, bottom of the barrel. The one benefit it really has going through it is super high aim assist at 73. Recoil direction is 60, which isn't great. Mag size is 41, which is typical. So stat-wise, again, definitely not impressive. And again, another 600 RPM auto rifle.
Yeah.
They're bringing back two 600 RPM auto rifles. Do you think they're giving us a hint that they might be buffing 600 RPM auto rifles?
It's a question. It is a question. Two of them coming back is a bit surprising, but we've seen occasional instances where they'll drop a bunch of weapons of an archetype into the pool and then not really do anything with it right away. And I don't know. I'd like to hope that they aren't bringing these back only for them to be irrelevant. I think that Bungie has improved their strategic addition of assets to the game considerably over the years. So I really want to hope that this means something. And I wouldn't be mad if adaptive auto rifles got a little better, if auto rifles in general got a little bit better. I think there's room for that. So the question I really want to ask about Duty Bound is this, right? We've heard from Bungie that they are, in general, not bringing back weapons with variable scopes. Duty Bound had variable scopes. It had two of the default scopes. It had the fast draw IS, which is just a small buff to range and handling, no change in zoom. And it had the red dot ORS-1, which buffs the zoom by 2 points, in addition to buffing range and handling. Now, they've said, and by they, I believe I'm speaking specifically of one man who's been on the show, that they are generally just bringing back the weapons with the best scope, because all people were using was the best scope the weapon had. Anyway, they didn't want any second best sights and scopes. So why even waste time on a perk that is meaningless? Totally, like, awesome stance, right? I love to hear that. Let's get rid of choices that don't matter. Give us choices that do. So they're going in favor of barrels, which do change the way the weapon feels in a more meaningful way. And just giving us a good scope instead of some bad scopes. So does that mean that this comes back with the red dot, which pushes its zoom from the default 1.6 for auto rifles up to 1.8? And paired with that very, very nice aim assist stat, does that mean that this weapon is actually better than it looks? Maybe.
Maybe.
Maybe. If it comes back with that extra zoom built in the new version, and some good perk pools, and 600 RPM auto rifles get buffed, this could be one to take another look at. That's a lot of caveats, but those will be the things that I'm looking for when it comes to deciding if this gun is worth picking up or if I'm just going to keep hanging on to Scathelocks as they drop.
Yeah, it's a lot of ifs. It's a lot of ifs. I'm not entirely sure that these, again, I'm not entirely sure anyone's tripping over themselves to run into Nightfalls or Trials to get a 600 RPM auto rifle. But should they become meta, maybe they will be. They're also bringing back an aggressive sniper rifle, Silicon Neuroma, which I believe originally came from the Ashermere strike. What was it? Why can I not remember the names of these strikes? It was the giant hobgoblin was the boss.
It's been a while.
Jeez, why can I not remember? Now I have to Google this because this is going to drive me insane. Like, what is the name of the strike that was the Ashermere strike on Io?
Yeah, I honestly never remember the names of strikes. For as much Destiny as I've played, you'd think I would, but that's just, it's irrelevant information.
Pyramidian.
To me.
The Pyramidian strike was what that was. There we go.
I loved, so that's a strike where I could listen to the narration for that strike again and again and never get tired of it. Asher was perhaps my favorite character in Destiny 2 for a while.
You know, the only thing I didn't is there was that dialogue that was like, you should now find yourself by the edge of the Radiolaria Lake. And you were like, your ghost was like, there is no lake. And that always bothered me because it was like, it would be cool if there was a lake. Why isn't there a lake? Why did you even write that into the game? Like, it was very weird dialogue because why did you write that into the game? What were they trying to say?
What they were trying to say is that the Vex have rewritten reality since he was there last. They've completely reconfigured the space and there was a lake and now there's not a lake.
Yeah, but that's just a weird way to say that. Like, that always bothered me because it was like, I want to see the lake. I felt like there are better ways to say they've reconfigured reality than there was a lake and now there's not a lake. You know?
I think it was perfectly clear. But
regardless, Silicon Neuroma as an adaptive sniper rifle, or sorry, aggressive sniper rifle. Sniper rifles in that class have a fire a shot every 0.83 seconds. They do 474 to the head, so they are the one class of sniper rifle that by base can headshot supers. Not that many people are trying to do that right now. This one has 77 range, which again, probably middle of the road. They're all between 80 and 73, at least all the usable ones are. The stability is terrible, but the stability doesn't really matter because the rate of fire is so slow. It's down at 25, which is actually, I think, the lowest out of any sniper rifle. The handling is also not great, and that hurts them significantly more. It pretty much means that you need to stack handling perks on it to make it feel really good. The handling is 32, which is the second lowest for any sniper rifle. The reload speed is 34, which is the second lowest for any sniper rifle. Now, granted, they could bring these things back and they could have entirely different stat values, but
they could.
In the past, when they have brought back guns, they have not had different stat values, at least not wildly different. They've added 1 to 2 points here and there, but for the most part, the stat values have been very close to the same. The inventory is 35, which is actually the lowest, the fourth lowest. There are technically a couple of adaptive sniper rifles that have lower inventory than that. That's how many you can carry in reserve. Not literally 35. The stat is 35. I think that means you can probably carry like 14 or 15 in reserve. But the aim assist is 47, which is, again, middle of the road for an aggressive. They flow between 41 and 49. Mag size is 3. That's obvious. The zoom on the original one that we had was 43 zoom. So at the time, it was one of the lower zoom snipers that you could get, which at the time was very sought after. Now people are debating which side is better. Some people still use occluded finality, which has crazy high zoom. Some people try to keep it right in the middle at 50. A handful of people go low into the 40s. But I think most people, especially with aggressive sniper rifles, would have trouble with the aim assist penalty that you get for going down that low. So it'll be interesting to see what zoom they bring it back at as well.
Yeah, it really will. This is a gun that originally had gave you a painful choice for some people between snapshot and opening. Snapshot sights and opening shot. Overall, I mean, it had, you know, on its default role, it had a pretty good set of perks. You could go arrowhead break, flared magwell, or accurized rounds, and then opening shot or snapshot, depending on your preference there. So, it was pretty decent back in the day in terms of being a PvP option. So we'll see what it comes back with. I don't do a ton of sniping, but sniping is certainly something that is pretty viable to do right now.
Okay. And the more Le Monarch gets viable, the more you should be sniping, because it's a hard counter to it. So
painfully hard counter to it.
These two weapons do come at a cost, though. They're actually removing 4 Nightfall weapons. Now, they said that's because they want to shift Nightfalls to a 3-week cycle, and so that required removing a couple of weapons. So they're removing the Swarm, which nobody's upset about, Shadow Price, which nobody's upset about, but then they're removing the Uzume RR4, which is actually one of the better snipers right now. Not the best, I think, you know, Adored still is probably up there, but they're also removing Hung Jury SR4, which I don't know that a ton of people are upset about, but I was actually interested in getting myself a box breathing roll. Box breathing on that allows it to 3-tap in 0.67 seconds, which is very, very fast TTK. One of the fastest TTKs in the game for a primary weapon, and an extremely fast TTK for a scout rifle. So the Uzume and the Hung Jury leaving, I feel like, kind of is a little bit of a blow to the loot pool for Nightfalls, and it's being replaced with an not super motivating in its current state auto rifle and a sniper rifle that could be pretty good, but a lot's going to depend on what it rolls with.
Yeah. I feel like my expectation, based on absolutely no information, and therefore an expectation that is likely to lead to disappointment, is that Silicon Neuroma is going to be more or less a direct trade out for Uzume. I'd like to hope that we're going to see some changes to auto rifles across the board, not just the 600s, but across the board, to make them more interesting in PvE at the very least, and possibly some changes that will be PvP affecting as well. And so if that happens, then this trade feels a lot better to me. The Hung Jury role is kind of a gimmick, in my opinion.
Oh, it definitely is.
But, but Uzume, for sure, is, I think, the one in there as far as PvP options go that is the most interesting. So we'll see. I think it's a fair bet that Silicon Neuroma will be a decent substitute. And we'll just have to see on the other guns.
Perhaps most horrifying is that Iron Banner, they've also talked about removing weapons from Iron Banner. And we don't exactly know. I mean, I'm sure we're going to get a couple new Iron Banner weapons. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
They didn't talk about them in this TWAB, but I'm sure we're going to get some. But we only have one more Iron Banner left. And if you were looking for good rolls of the Multimach CCX, the Time Worn Spire, the Guiding Sight, the Steady Hand, three out of those four are pretty good weapons. The Multimach CCX in particular is very good for a submachine gun if you don't like Shiera's, or if you want something different than Shiera's. And the Time Worn Spire, we've talked about before, is a sleeper hit of a pulse rifle with insane capabilities that are way far outside of what you'd expect from its archetype. And in particular, what's really unfortunate for me is I still haven't gotten a Time Worn Spire roll that's pretty good. So I've got one Iron Banner left to try to nab one, and then it's going away.
Yeah, it's the lack of focusing on Iron Banner has been really painful. I do have my perfect Time Worn Spire. I cannot get a multi-mach that, like, it either has a long zoom scope and garbage perks, or a perfect set of perks and short range scopes only. I don't understand why I can't get max range and a max zoom scope. That's all I want. That's all I want in life right now. It's just one max range, max zoom multi-mach to complete my set of ridiculous submachine guns that I will probably use very rarely, but I'm nonetheless proud of.
Have we done a breakdown on the multi-mach? I'm looking for it right now, and I don't remember when we talked about that.
I think it was quite a long time ago. I mean, we can just briefly cover the roles of interest are not complicated. I mean, what I'm looking for, I'll just go straight to it. What I'm looking for is the Model 8 Red scope. I'll take a Model 6 loop as a you know, a negotiating chip if the rest of it is great. And then I want dynamic sway reduction and iron reach for max range, perfect stability. And honest to goodness, like, I almost don't even care about the magazine if I get that. Accurized rounds is just like more range on top of the range. Great if I get it, but it's not a game breaker if I get the other three perks that I want.
And Time Worn Spire is that one we did definitely do a breakdown of. We actually did all rapid fire pulse rifles back in episode 232. So if you want to look back and listen to that one, episode 232 is what you're looking for. We talk about Time Worn Spire, and that is it is just really a tremendous, tremendous weapon.
It's basically the same role, though.
Yeah, it's very similar. You're trying to stretch the range out. It's one of those weapons that you wouldn't think, but it can actually outrange a messenger if you get the right perks on it. So,
yeah. Iron reach plus max zoom. That zoom just like shuts down the recoil. It's amazing. So,
oh boy.
There we go.
Yeah. Hopefully we get some good stuff. You know, I'm not always the biggest fan of weapons leaving. Bungie seems to love cycling things in and out, and definitely giving me a little bit of the FOMO, because some of the time I like Glacioclasm still never got a good roll 2 years in.
Yeah. It can be difficult when there's even when you can focus, sometimes it can be difficult. So did we say Guiding Sight, Steady Hand also going away? So they're
less upset about this.
Yeah. They're taking out two of the kind of the big three of the 120s, bottom dollar being the other one that comes to mind readily for me. And we'll see if bottom dollar, I assume it's staying around. It sounds like they're revamping Gambit, but they're not really changing anything else at the same time. If you really want a good 120 and you miss out this season, you may have to play Gambit.
Kind of surprised we didn't get more info for Witch Queen to talk about. Was really, really holding out hope that in this extended season they were going to throw us a bit of lifeline at the end here. Haven't gotten it yet, but again, like I said, we only have three TWABs left. And so I gotta feel like probably at least two out of those three TWABs, if not all three, are going to be big. Going to be a lot of stuff to talk about. But for right now, we're grasping at straws here for you. We're trying to do breakdowns of weapons that we don't know what perks are going to be on them, and or lamenting the fact that weapons that we do know the perks are going to be going away, and we still haven't gotten the right rolls that we want.
Yeah. It's that's the Guardian's life in a nutshell right there. The life of the Destiny player.
I think we are probably fine to move on into the listener questions now. So
yeah, let's see if we can knock a few out.
We should probably start with the serious questions first, because we have a couple of not necessarily goofy, but just not really super serious questions. So Flashbolt has two specific questions, both about things that may or may not need to be nerfed. The first one, he says, would you guys like to discuss Cool Guy's recent video about nerfing Stompies? I understand they make hunters harder to duel, but I don't really feel like there are good, strong alternatives. In the past, when Worm Husk was great, everyone switched until it was nerfed. I just don't see how it's massively OP compared to Dunes, Transversives, Ophidians. I mean, their new offering was to give our throwing knife an extra bounce. I can't believe people weren't lining up to drop Stompies for that. Bombardiers is slowing people that are already chasing you in melee range on a 1 second delay. Thanks, I'll pass, because I'll be dead anyways. You don't have to agree with me, obviously. I just appreciate a good discussion on the topic. He said he's already had the discussion in the Discord server, and he thinks he understands it now, but we can still talk about it if we'd like. So you know that I make fun of Stompies more than the average Destiny player, probably.
Yeah.
I am actually of the belief that I would like to see Stompies tuned down, but not enough to drive players away from them en masse. I have said this on firing range before, but I actually, like, as far as annoying things that hunters can do, Stompies are actually one of the least annoying. What is annoying is the sheer prevalence of them. But things like Gemini Jesters, Shinobu's Vow, there are much more annoying hunter builds that could be used. And my fear is if you hit Stompies too hard, you're going to actually have a bunch of hunters realizing, like, oh, I was using this movement ability all the time, but I actually have movements that physically cause pain to other guardians that I could be using. And I don't actually want to see that, because hunters are very prevalent in the Crucible, and I don't actually want to have a bunch of hunters dodging around, being invisible for 10 to 11 seconds, or having two skip grenades to use with faster cooldowns, or removing my radar. Like, I don't actually want to see that. Like, I think Stompies are annoying, but Stompie hunters are predictable, and I don't have an issue playing against them. The only thing that I would like to see is, and I think that this would be hilarious, and I've said this before, when you use Stompies, if you're in the air, you have no aim assist. I think that would be the funniest thing ever, because I think people are still going to use them, but it will just, like, hurt just a little bit to use them, right? Like, everyone, that's not enough to, I think, drive anyone away, but I think it limits.
I think you are incorrect about that.
You think it would drive people away if when they're airborne, they have no aim assist?
Oh, yes.
Well,
oh, yes.
I think that's funny, because that pretty much means that if you stop using Stompies when you lose your aim assist, it's because you needed the aim assist to help you shoot to begin with.
There's a reason that Stompies are always paired with a like max stat, perfect rolled hand cannon. That's just...
You can't see, but I'm shrugging.
Yeah.
I'm shrugging over here. It's like, well, you know, if you need the aim assist to help you hit things, I don't know. I mean, to me, it's funny, because, like, a lot of the people who use Stompies are super sweaty, super try hard. And a lot of the people, I think, underestimate, particularly on mouse and keyboard, underestimate how much aim assist helps. And I would just, you know, I think that they can keep their speed, they can keep their jump, they can keep their slide. Just take away aim assist when they're airborne. It's literally all I want. And yeah, I mean, I'm not as big on Cool Guy as on nerf Stompies, because something will rise to take their place. Yeah. And if you look at every other hunter exotic that's, like, pretty strong right now, like, the one that's going to rise to take their place is probably going to be pretty annoying to play against.
Yeah, there are definitely some strong options out there. Graviton Forfeit, you mentioned, can be super annoying to play against. Gemini Jester can be super annoying. Dragon Shadow is actually a fantastic option for hunters. I run Frosties, like, when I just want to play random content, and I might be playing PvP, I might be playing PvE, and I just don't want to think about like changing exotics out, I just run Frosties nonstop. I've had a masterworked for, they were the first exotic I masterworked because they're just massively good. I'm constantly sprinting in every piece of content that I play. And even with the nerfs to ability regen, they are still so effective at getting everything back really fast. Super, super strong. Yeah, and I mean,
Oathkeepers with Lamonarch.
Yeah, Oathkeepers with Lamonarch. I've been actually, I have discovered that if I pair, there's another question in here that I'd like to get to that we probably won't because I already know my answer. But I've discovered that precision frame hand cannons paired with Lamonarch are apparently like my perfect loadout. My KD actually like increases by a full point. Perhaps because I'm trying hard for once in the Crucible, but the hip fire and the in air aim assist that we talked about on those is redonkulous. The time to kill is atrocious, but when you shoot someone with Lamonarch first, it doesn't matter. So there are a lot of good options out there for hunters. What else can we mention?
Ahamkar's spine for a trip mine.
Yeah. Ahamkar's spine is excellent. You'll pick up so many free assists and random kills with that.
Six coyote for double dodges.
Mm-hmm. Shinobu's you didn't mention by name before, but double better skip grenades is another great way to pick up free kills in sixes, especially, and can be very oppressive if used well in threes.
This is what I'm saying. Like, we are lucky right now that the chosen hunter exotic is just a movement exotic, and that's it. All it does is movement. Like, it may be annoying to see hunters bouncing off of roofs and changing directions in the air, and trust me, like, it annoys me too. But you know what annoys me more is a hunter dodging right next to me and removing my radar for like 10 seconds. Or a hunter chucking two skip grenades one after the other that track me around a wall, and now I can't dodge to break the tracking, so I literally just have to run away. Like, it's a dangerous game to play to nerf an exotic when that exotic is, you know, we've talked about this before, but like, abilities and things in games are not a zero-sum game, right? Like, because somebody enjoys something doesn't mean the other person dislikes it. Who's on the receiving end of it doesn't mean that they dislike it an equivalent amount, right? Yeah. It is possible for someone to enjoy something a lot and the person on the receiving end to be kind of like ambivalent about it. And that's how I am with Stompies. Then there's something like Gemini Jesters, where someone might enjoy using Gemini Jesters, but the person on the receiving end of Gemini Jesters is real pissed about it. And like, that's a net negative, right? And so you have to be really careful about shifting the meta to abilities or exotics which are net negative, where the person who's on the receiving end of it dislikes it a lot more than the person who's using it likes it.
Yeah, it can definitely, you can run the risk. Hunters are getting more and more things that trigger on their dodge thanks to stasis. And it's honest to goodness, I think, a miracle entirely attributable to Stompies that we weren't getting slowed and losing our radar simultaneously more than we did when stasis was strong.
Or that Bokris like never became bigger than it even was. Like, Bokris is big for a bit. It, like, if Stompies didn't exist, Bokris would have been everywhere. And that would have been really frustrating.
So yeah, there's a lot of stuff that Stompies sort of suppresses. So don't discount that. All right, well, we've spent enough time talking about Stompies, I think.
So Flashbolt's second thing he wants to talk about is DMT. He said it's been the top 3 to 5 pretty much all season. It got a buff earlier in the season. It's been number one before. It's actually brought all scouts into the top 5 just by itself. It's basically Ace of Spades with Memento Mori always on. You can hip fire. He basically just says, what do you think about it? You know, having random rolls means you can also get Vorpal, which makes it even stronger. I mean, what I honestly think is I think it probably didn't need the buff that it got. I would probably start by rolling that back, because I know that they said that it wasn't going to, it should not have affected it more on mouse and keyboard, but it kind of did, even if it was just a placebo and people started using it again and that was all it took. DMT was really strong before they buffed it again on mouse and keyboard. On controller, it's always kind of just been. The hip fire aim assist is super wonky on controller.
Yeah.
It has like this weird little pie slice on the head, where usually if you're aiming below the head, it will pull the bullet up to the head. But with DMT, it just doesn't. So you basically have to aim in like a halo around the top of the head on controller. And it's just really awkward. And that kind of keeps it in check on controller. So, you know, if you honestly want to bring it down, I mean, I think on mouse and keyboard, you may have to do like a split range tuning where the damage fall off starts way sooner on mouse and keyboard. Or alternatively, and I already said this once for another, you know, suggested nerf, but like remove all bullet bend on mouse and keyboard entirely. Like I think DMT, living up to the Tex Mechanica family name, may be a gun that you might just eventually have to do split tuning for mouse and keyboard and controller, because it's oppressive on PC, like really, really brutally oppressive. And on controller, it's like pretty good, but not nearly to the same extent that it is on PC.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's absolutely true. I think this is just a gun that needs to be tuned differently for PC, because the two environments are too different. And these weapons that are designed to perform well when hip firing are just tough to balance on PC, because when you can hip fire successfully combined with just the incredible like pace of combat on PC, it's absolutely savage. Yeah, there's nothing you can do about that. Honest to goodness, I'd be happy if they rolled the nerf back and just fixed the wonky critical, like the wonky precision aiming on controller. They could absolutely roll it back and I would be totally happy.
It'd be very good then. That's the problem. If you fix the wonky aiming on controller, it would probably be very good. The only reason I think it's not very good on controller is because the aiming is so weird on it.
Yeah. I don't know what the deal is, because if I ADS, it's fine. I can land crits all day. If I aim a
hip fire.
If I'm hip firing, you know, I'm pointing my reticle the same way. It just doesn't. It's not consistent. So anyway,
realistically, like if they were to do that, they're going to have to bring the damage fall off and hip fire way up. I think it's in like, it was originally 60 meters. And then I think they brought it down to like 38 or 40 meters. Like you might have to bring it into like 20 or 25 meters, like kind of a little bit outside of where the BXR resides. Because if you don't, and people are hip firing at that super fast hip fire rate of fire from really far away, and even when the damage starts falling off, if they've got cranial spike up, like they can still three tap from really long distances, hip firing, like it's just super strong. It's a really cool idea for a gun, but when every other gun in the sandbox, except for three, forces you to ADS and reduce your mobility and reduce your field of view and everything, like it just has huge advantages over everything else. And pinpoint accurate hip fire can be a game breaker.
Yeah. The one caveat, the one thing going against it is the terrible in-air accuracy that it has. Because you can hip fire it, I really want to use it in air, but you cannot put an Icarus mod on it.
Lion Rampants, man. That's the one thing Titan's got going for it now. Lion Rampants with BXR or DMT is a tremendous amount of fun.
Honestly, it's making me consider playing Dawnblade, which I normally am just not into. But yeah, I'm considering going that route just so I can use it in the air. But the thing is, I want to use it in air on Hunter, and I can't do that. It's horrible in air on Hunter. And every time I go to it and I try to balance it, it just fucks me up.
If only Celestial Nighthawk did what it was originally going to do in D1. And D1, Celestial Nighthawk was data mine. Its original perk was going to give you in-air accuracy. And unfortunately, before that ever ended up happening, they removed that from it because they realized that that would have been the stompies of D1, basically. But
only better.
So that's two things we've talked about that are nerfs. Now we have a question from Monte Cristo talking about a buff. He says, Xenophage, he loves it. Loves the lore, animations, everything. Used to love the way it felt in PvE. Got hit with some pretty serious nerfs, and it's basically unusable now. How would you guys buff it to make it viable in PvE again? You and I think have differing opinions on what we do. I would just roll back the nerf that it got because I really don't think it needed the nerf. I don't think anyone's complaining if a machine gun is a DPS king. And an exotic machine gun is a DPS king in PvE. I would just jack the rate of fire back up. It's 90 now. It was 120. I would just put it back to 120.
So, yeah, I mean, my answer was a little bit different. And that is that I would just give machine guns in general a blanket damage buff in PvE. Bungie's already acknowledged that they really are not meeting the goal that they had set out to achieve with them. And I feel like more damage is probably the simplest, most straightforward path to that goal. And if they all get more damage, Xenophage gets more damage, and they all kind of get better. A rising tide raises all boats or some such nonsense.
Rising tide raises all ships, I think, is the actual thing. I like that phrase. I think that's a fun turn of phrase.
I've been landlocked my whole life, so it's all a bit Greek to me.
I use that phrase at work when I'm trying to explain to my boss why he needs to give me a raise. Like, come on, man, you know, a rising tide raises all ships, right? Pay me more and you'll make more money. I don't know how it works, but you know, just do it.
Yeah, it's the trickle up effect.
Yeah, something like it's priming the pump. Yeah, right, that's the opposite of trickle down, right? Reaganomics is trickle down, and the opposite is priming the pump. Those stimulus checks are definitely priming the pump.
They didn't hurt.
I'm sure that's why we have basically runaway inflation right now. But this is neither the time nor the place to talk about that.
Indeed. This is not our economics podcast. That's coming in some dark timeline.
That's the obscure future where Massive Breakdown Podcast has splintered apart, and now we talk about economics instead of fun stuff. But all right, as far as fun things go, Noodles says it's we're now in the fun questions, by the way, guys. We have left the serious questions behind. These are now fun questions. Noodle says it's 2 a.m. You have the house to yourself and you've been grinding trials all night. Your frustration grows with every loss. And when you feel yourself at your breaking point, a magical destiny wizard appears before your eyes. He offers you the opportunity to equip an exotic weapon in every slot, bypassing the one exotic limit. However, there is a price to pay. You won't be able to change your equipped weapons for an entire year of destiny. And when the year is over, the exotic weapon cap will again take effect. Your lust for power is great and you hastily accept the bargain. What are the three weapons you have equipped? P.S. I would take Hawkmoon Duality, and maybe it's recency bias, but Gjallarhorn. That's a fun question.
Yeah, that's a good choice, too. He's made some good opening picks, set the stage for us. So I glanced at this in advance, and I thought, okay. Now, he's asking this question in the context of PvP. So I guess I'd want to clarify if I can't, if my loadout is set for PvP only, or if it's for all Destiny content. Because that makes a slight difference.
Not for me. Same thing. Same
well,
exact
I know
thing.
You're going to equip the Monarch in all three slots.
No, just in one out of the three. All right. I actually have a kinetic weapon and a power weapon that I like.
Okay, go for it. What do you got?
So I'm going to do No Time to Explain, which is the high impact pulse rifle and the kinetic. I'm going to do Le Monarch because this is the closest I can get to my messenger Le Monarch build, right? But with exotics. And I think No Time to Explain is actually better than messenger. I just can't rock it with Le Monarch. And then I would do Truth in the heavy slot because Truth is my favorite PvP rocket launcher.
Very nice. Mm-hmm. Very nice. So my picks are actually pretty close. So I'd pick Le Monarch because it's just such a fantastic all-around weapon. You can take it into raids, grandmasters. Somebody out there is cringing right now. And that's okay. So for my power weapon, I have always loved the Wardcliff Coil. I think it's just an incredibly fun weapon to fire. the dopamine rush I get when I pull that trigger, even when I kill myself, which, you know, happens occasionally with that gun. I don't care. It just feels good. It's wildly entertaining to me. And the place I struggled was the kinetic slot, because what I really want to pick in my heart of hearts is the last word. And if this was a PvP only lock, I'd pick the last word. But since it's for the entirety of Destiny and I have to play PvE at times, and the last word is just hot garbage in PvE, as much as it pains me to admit it, I think I would have to go with Ace of Spades. Because speaking of dopamine rushes, that is a gun that hits the spot. It feels good, it sounds good, it looks good. And it pairs great with the Monarch. You want to talk about a blint following up into a massive kill spree? Yeah, that gets me excited.
What if you could pair Sturm with the Monarch, but for some reason the Monarch activated Sturm's perk? Actually, you know what I was reading? Dark Force Rising, which is one of the Timothy Zahn Thrawn novels from Legends continuity in Star Wars.
Okay.
And they meet a smuggler named Talon Card, I believe. And he has two, I think they're called Vormusks. And they're written as like a combination of like a big cat, like a jaguar or something like that, basically. And he has two of them, and their names are Sturm and Drang. And I thought that was super, super cool, because this was, you know, 30 years ago. And Sturm and Drang obviously has references outside of both Destiny and Star Wars. But I thought that was pretty cool, because I read it, I was like, oh, I recognize those names. I recognize them from Destiny. So totally unrelated to what we're talking about right now, but it just popped into my head.
Yeah, just for those who are curious, Sturm und Drang, my German is not great, is a literary and artistic movement in Germany in the late 18th century, influenced by Jean-Jacques Rousseau and characterized by the expression of emotional unrest and a rejection of neoclassical literary norms. It literally translates to storm and stress. So there you go. Now you've got your literature homework done for the week, and we can move on.
Yeah, the images that they show, a lot of them are like dark clouds casting shadows onto turf and high wind blowing and ships toppling over and stuff like that. So definitely very interesting. But yeah, moving on. The Patient Wolf has two questions, long questions. He says, I'm going to set it up a bit. I've been listening to podcasts nearly 40 hours a week for 8 years. When I got into Destiny 2 years ago, I needed a podcast. Because I'm a landscaper and at work, podcast work, but YouTube doesn't. The first one that came up was DCP. I have since come to appreciate that podcast, but at first I felt they were relying on personality a bit too much and they rarely talked about Destiny 2. Then I found Massive Breakdowns, which was different, and that the subject content was forefront and the personalities were enjoyable but not performing. Oh, he says our personalities are enjoyable. That's
nice. I like that.
Thank you for the compliment.
That's good.
Through listening, I began to learn so much via osmosis. It was literally like learning Spanish from watching Mexican TV. I figured with the added attention to Massive Breakdowns from Firing Range and the Massive Breakdown interview with the Bungie dev you guys did a while back, the show has probably gotten more listeners. I've been wondering this for a while, and I think some of the community would like to hear it, and it would just be fun, an origin story, if you will. So my question is, how did you two meet each other, and what did the creation of the Massive Breakdown podcast look like in the beginning?
Oh, boy. We get this question periodically, and we answer it periodically.
Was it 6 years ago that we started this, or was it seven?
Ish.
Seven-ish. Yeah, six-ish years ago. It was a long time. It actually started on Reddit.
Yeah.
And it kind of just happened. I was posting Massive Breakdowns at the time. That was pretty much the only place I really contributed, is I wrote. At that point in time, I was writing a lot. I was writing at least like three Massive Breakdowns a week, it felt like. And you were doing the Arms Day post back when Arms Day was a thing. And so we were both posting kind of similar style content to Reddit, like pretty consistently.
Yeah. Yeah. So when Arms Day first came about, there was another Redditor, Wiley Kyoto, who started posting the roles every week as they became available, and we would get, he kind of crowdsourced them. This was early days before people were posting infographics and all that kind of fancy stuff. So it's, we were
dark
just crowdsourcing
days, guys.
Yes.
We didn't have this fantastic Twitter community we have now that builds these beautiful infographics every week. We had to read text on Reddit.
In the dark ages, we called this fun.
Yeah.
So anyway, we were crowdsourcing these roles on Reddit. And so he and I kind of started working together. Basically, he would crowdsource the roles and then I would drop reviews. And so I would post, a lot of times I'd post a comment, just like, there was a rule that they started to enforce on me because some people complained for some reason, because people on Reddit, you know, they'll complain about anything, even somebody trying to do something helpful, they accused me of karma farming by posting a comment and then later updating it with the reviews. But like, people had asked me, because if I happened to be busy at work that day and I dropped my reviews late, then it would be a little harder to find my comment. And so they were like, oh, you should post a comment earlier and we'll upvote it. And then when you drop your reviews, it's going to be right at the top. And I'm like, all right, sure. So I was told by the mods I had to post some actual content in that comment. And so I would start to just post like stuff like about the lore from like the guns, or just like random things that weren't super related, but weren't completely unrelated. And that got around it. So anyways, all that to say, I wrote up a massive long document that I still have somewhere in my drive for all of the Arms Day weapons, breaking them down. And I would go through and post the reviews, and I'd kind of update it over time. And at some point, I don't remember how we actually started chatting about this. It was just it was like nested into some comment thread. We ended up starting a conversation about a podcast.
We were going back and forth talking about a weapon, if I remember this correctly. And someone commented on it and was like, it's fun reading you two talk about a weapon. It would be cool if you guys had like a podcast or something. It was literally something like that. It was like, we were talking back and forth about a weapon, and someone mentioned that they enjoyed reading that, and it would be cool if we had a podcast where we could do it. Like, it was not my idea to start a podcast. It was some random commenter just said it would be cool. And you and I were already talking, and Cougar was there too, for some reason.
Yeah.
And
so he had started writing Arms Day reviews from a strictly PvP standpoint. At that point in time, I was doing a lot more raiding and in-game PvE. And so I would talk about PvP a little bit, but I was kind of more both sides of the fence.
Yeah, Cougar was the sweaty trials player. And I was like the sixes player, and you were the PvE player. We had a much more balanced podcast back in the day. And we were just all talking, and someone said you should start a podcast. And I was like, all right. So I remember like messaging you guys and being like, well, do you want to start a podcast? And you and Cougar were both like, sure. So we literally just like, not knowing anything about anything, like just started a podcast.
Nothing.
Yeah. Like, I don't even know how. It's kind of amazing that it ended up working out as well as it did, because like, we legitimately didn't know anything. Like, none of us had ever done a podcast before. Like, I had done YouTube stuff in the past. But like, we just started, we got together and we started talking and started editing it. And I mean, I look back on those first episodes and I'm embarrassed by how awful they are. But it turned into something great. So.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I didn't have an office at this time. So I was recording either in my kitchen or in my garage. Just, you know, we didn't know really anything about like how to manage audio.
Well, to be fair, we didn't know anything about that until like 25 episodes ago when Mr. Sutton helped us out. Our sound quality was still pretty shit. Like 200 episodes in, it was still pretty bad.
It was better though. It was better. Anyway.
It was better.
You developed some level of intuitive game. Anyway,
honestly, it was fine until I moved houses. That's when it got bad again. Like, we had gotten it to the point where it was good enough, and then I moved houses and I hadn't touched my mic in like 4 years. And when I had to move my mic, I like fucked everything up. And that's, I'm not supposed to wait. Is that my only F word for this podcast?
I think that's your only one.
PG-13.
You dropped an S-bomb earlier, but
that's fine. It doesn't matter. I just can't say the F word. I mean, it is really, really crazy. The podcast has turned out where it is today from where it started, but it got traction early. Like, I was looking back at the stats from our first episode. We had like 500 listens in the first day on our first episode.
Well, so this was because you had literally, it was fortuitous timing that we got into this when we did, because you had just spent like some unholy number of hours in the Last Rites mission trying to work out the core functionality of aim assist bullet magnetism and reticle stickiness. And so that was our first topic, was range, aim assist. I don't know if we also talked about stability.
Yeah, we did.
We started out basically talking about what do all of the stats actually do? What do they include? What do they not include? Those were like our first early topics. And so like we really got into it at a good time when you fortunately had put in a lot of work that led to, I think, what were massive revelations for a lot of people.
Well, that stuff was still being argued about. So think about this. Like, we started learning the basics of what aim assist and stability and range and accuracy did 6 years ago.
Yeah.
And people were still arguing about that stuff all the way up until we had Chris Proctor on the show and he like answered those questions. Like, I went into that mission with the express intent of like figuring out how those things worked. And actually, I got pretty darn close. Like, I was a little bit off on how aim assist and accuracy interacted. But I was close enough to where it still functionally was the same, just like my diagramming of it was wrong. But the stability affecting aim assist thing, that was crazy. Nobody had any idea that stability affected aim assist. And I actually was trying to prove that it did not when I was doing my test. Someone on Reddit had actually said, well, what if stability affects? Because what I had found is that aim assist degraded as you continued to fire. And that was something that people didn't know at that point in time. And I had proved that aim assist got weaker as you fired. And someone said, well, what if stability affects aim assist? And I thought, that's the stupidest thing. There's no reason for that to happen. So I went back into Last Rites to prove that it didn't and realized that it did, and then had to come back and be like, he was actually right. Like, stability does affect aim assist. And people still didn't believe that for half a decade after that information came out. They still didn't believe it.
It's tough. I mean, I still remember committing myself to the hill in terms of how Zoom affected like recoil. Even though I thought it was completely obvious with just some basic testing, people argued against that, that Zoom actually functionally reduced recoil for years. And
Zoom was not understood for quite a while.
Yeah, Zoom, and it's one of those things where you go and you do the test and you're like, oh, okay, well, that makes this sort of makes sense. And at some point, Bungie explained why it works that way, and their explanation made a ton of sense. You know, right? They're doing it so that your in-game experience is good and is not fucking. I'm breaking the rules.
This is R-rated now.
Yeah, and your in-game experience is not awful, is what I was trying to say, and it's just late and things slip. So, my apologies for that one. That's on me. But yeah, so it makes sense, right? But people just didn't believe that Zoom worked that way. And I had people getting multiple angles of me firing like all kinds of different fusion rifles to show the way that the bolts spread, like changing, because I was trying to argue that high zoom on fusion rifles was like arguably the most important thing you could have in terms of pushing out the kill distance. And there's a lot of pushback to that argument, but I was right.
And then they neutered zoom on fusion rifles, and they made it to where all fusion rifles had 1.5 times zoom, no matter what scope you put on.
So basically, everyone's welcome for that.
Yeah. They also didn't believe that zoom narrowed the aim assist cone either.
Yeah.
That was a big one as well. People didn't want to believe that. And that was something that we were arguing all the way up until the Bungie interview as well. It's crazy, man. It's crazy how much everything has grown in the community.
I think we've just spent the last 10 minutes patting ourselves on the back for being right. But
hey, we're deep into the episode, man. The only people listening now are the people who want to hear it. So,
So trips down nostalgia lane there, back to battles of years past. And now the Destiny Science Channel moves so fast that I literally cannot keep up with it, even if I try.
It's grown way bigger than us at this point. Destiny Science, like the Discord channel, contributes far more than either of us contribute now to progressing the discovery of the very obscure and opaque mechanics in Destiny. And now we also have the PvE podcast as well. So we shifted from being a really well-balanced podcast to being very, very PvP oriented, and had to spin up an entire second podcast to rebalance it out.
Well, you know, it's important to keep the force balanced, though. You don't want to let it get unbalanced. Who knows what could happen?
With great light comes great dark, right?
That's right. That's right. And hence the PvE podcast was born.
Yeah. Speaking of other podcasts, Patient Wolf has one other question. He says, what podcast were you listening to at the time? And interestingly, I was listening to the only other podcast I listened to. I only listen to one podcast besides ours when I'm editing ours. And sometimes I listen to our Star Wars ones when I'm in the gym, because I like to hear if we sound like idiots when we're talking about Star Wars, but most of the time we don't. And I actually kind of enjoy it. So, at the time I was listening to Star Trek, The Next Conversation, which still to this day, 6 years later, I'm still listening to, and it's the only podcast I listen to. It's actually what, if you look at the format of Star Trek, The Next Conversation, you'll see a lot of crossover between how they do that and how we do Beneath Twin Suns. The difference being that they have 45-minute long intros in the beginning. 45 minutes. It's crazy. If you think our intros are bad at like 10 minutes, 45 minutes worth of intros is what they do.
Man, that is a lot of intro. You know, but that is long intros are not uncommon in a lot of like more indie shows. So I am trying to think back that far to what I was listening to. I listen to a lot of podcasts, and I actually oscillate between binging audiobooks and binging podcasts, because at some point I get kind of tired of listening to podcasts. I listen to podcasts to learn things. At some point I get tired of learning things and I just want to like escape the world for, you know, 3 to 9 months. And so then I just listen to like sci-fi and fantasy audiobooks for a while until I get a hankering to learn something. And then I go back to podcasts. So at the time it was going to be NPR podcasts, probably. I believe early in our careers as professional Destiny podcasters, making professional Destiny podcast salaries, I was also listening to Destiny Down Under, because those guys cracked me up. And I don't know if they're still podcasting or not at this point. I've kind of lost track. But And then just a bunch of NPR. Wait. Classic. Best news show ever made. This American Life, I used to enjoy. Now it just kind of makes me sad. I know what I was listening to Freakonomics a ton. That's what I was listening to the most, actually, at that point. I was on a crazy Freakonomics binge. I listened to like 200 Freakonomics episodes over the course of a year. So needless to say, almost every day.
So there you have it, guys. Some fun questions, some serious questions. Trying to bide our time until we get some real Witch Queen info for you that we can break down in Massive Breakdowns fashion.
Yeah, we're just going to keep recording until they drop Witch Queen info. So get ready, buckle up.
Or until
it's going to be a long week without sleep.
I have to go do wedding stuff.
Yeah.
Which is pretty immediate. So, all right, guys, thank you for tuning in. We will obviously see you next week. In the short term, we are recording Beneath Twin Suns, going to be going over episode 5 of Book of Boba Fett, which was a fantastic episode. A lot to talk about. We'll be recording that Sunday for release Monday morning, as is per usual. And then the PvE cast will also be releasing Tuesday morning. So we've kind of stacked up the week. Now, early in the week, you get Beneath Twin Suns Monday, you get PvE cast Tuesday, you get Massive Breakdowns on Friday. You can get a full week's worth of Massive Breakdown podcast coming at you. And remember, for Beneath Twin Suns, totally separate feed now. Got to go find it on its own. No longer on the Massive Breakdown feed anymore. So if you want to listen to it, same thing with PvE. We have isolated all the feeds. They're all on their own. So I know it's kind of annoying to subscribe to multiple things, but we felt like it was better than cluttering up one feed with three different shows. At least in my opinion, it's better that way. So
yeah, this way you get what you want. You don't get what you don't want.
Yeah. Thank you guys for tuning in, and we'll see you next week. Bye.
Peace.